Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Clayton Johnson. He's a swine veterinarian at Carthage Veterinary Service in Carthage, Illinois. Great to see you, Clayton.
Yep, thanks, Joe. Appreciate you having me.
I was surprised when we were talking the other day because we were talking about emerging diseases and so forth, but you said that, you know, in comparison to previous years, PCV2 whipped your butt this past winter. And that really surprised me because, you know, more than 20 years ago, PCV2 was a problem, but we've got some good vaccines. And so to hear that there's this sudden spike has got to be a big concern. What's going on?
You know, it surprised me too, because you described it well, and that in previous years we've had pretty good control. It's not something that I could have forecasted. And what I mean by that is there wasn't a bunch of lead-up evidence that a farm broke with PRRS and had some other issues or things that maybe immunosuppressed them, or, you know, we had some sort of a big challenge that we could therefore expect a secondary disease to pop up. These are very healthy herds that I worked with that destabilized for PCV2 last year. They're actually genetic herds, so top of the health pyramid, PRRS-free, mycoplasma-free, all the coronaviruses-free. Essentially stable for every pathogen on the farm except for PCV2. And not startup farms in every case. Not farms that were all gilt breeding projects, and as soon as we started farrowing the first pigs out of the barn, started to have issues post-weaning. And in many cases, these were herds that were established, had good parity status, and we saw it behave essentially like an outbreak. I mean, like an epidemic disease, like a PRRS break or
really?
Something like that.
So it wasn't subclinical, it was more like maybe what the industry saw more than 20 years ago?
In the post-weaning pigs, yeah, I think that's kind of fair to say. The sow farm side, it depended on the herd. In some of the sow farms, we might have seen clinical signs. In other sow farms, maybe it was just limited to some diagnostic evidence that indicated that there was more PCV2 that had been there before, but you didn't see overt clinical signs. We didn't have a huge spike in mummies in every case, or a bunch of PCVAD in the gilt developer that would tip us off.
But on some farms you did.
Yeah. And post-weaning, that was really the consistent piece that, you know, post-weaning you would have issues with the pigs, classic PCVAD in extremely young pigs, nursery-age pigs, and it did. It filled in many ways like it was 2006, 2007 again, except these are extremely well-vaccinated populations, and like I said, very, very stable health in every other circumstance. So it was not a secondary issue from what we know today to some other insult. It was a primary challenge. So a pathogen that we thought we'd had really well under control, re-emerging and causing issues again.
Was there anything common about those farms where you had the outbreaks?
They are common genotypes, so they're all the same sow lines, and as I mentioned, they're genetic herds. But outside of that, there's really not a lot of commonalities to it. The farms were all stocked out of different sources. The management protocols would be roughly the same, but they don't share people. The sequences weren't the same. They were all PCV2D isolates, so the new family of isolates. But if you talk to Darren Madsen or any of the folks that do a lot of the diagnostic work on it, they would tell you that those are the isolates that are out there. And if we compare them to healthy herds that didn't have any issues, those are the isolates that are out there. But the specific sequences, if we put them on a dendrogram like we do with PRRS or flu, they would show up as being different pathogens. So it wasn't that it was one individual isolate that, you know, blew through all these herds, like a 174 mm-hmm. PRRS outbreak or something like
right.
that. It was different isolates in each situation. Different feed mills. Really, we kind of struggled to come up with what's the risk factor that seems to be extremely common between them, other than, like I said, they happen to be genetic herds.
What can you tell me about the vaccination program? Any takeaway messages from there?
Yeah, I would tell you we felt like we had not just an industry standard vaccination program on the farms, but a really robust vaccination program on the farms. On the sow farm end of it, you've got the growing gilts that need to be vaccinated, and then you've got a sow population. The growing gilts would get a full regimen of PCV2 vaccination, commercial vaccine. We really weren't doing anything extremely unique or novel that I could point at and say, well, in hindsight, I was on the bleeding edge of innovation and I made a mistake there. We were using generally per-label protocols, commercially available vaccines that we have used for years with absolutely tremendous success. And I don't say that just at Carthage. We've used them. The whole industry's been using them very successfully. So at weaning, the gilts, fully vaccinated. We select those gilts for reproductive purposes at about 20 weeks of age. And part of their pre-breeding vaccination program is to booster that PCV2 vaccine then. And I would tell you, for years, we kind of all, you know, laughed and nudged and said, well, it's just an insurance program, right? It's not a lot of money. And there have been enough PCV2 reproductive stuff to say, well, the pain's bad when it happens, so let's make sure we get another dose into them before they actually enter the breeding herd to prevent that. So we were doing that, and again, I'd say that's pretty industry standard at this point. We weren't doing any mass vaccinations with the sow farms. So, you know, we might do that with, say, a flu, a quarterly or a seasonal type vaccination. We weren't doing that with PCV2, but that has been something that we've been rethinking since these outbreaks, is perhaps the immunity is waning after time, and we've relied on the vaccines to be amazing, which they have, but the reality is that program didn't protect these farms, unfortunately.
What about vaccinating the pigs themselves, the growing pigs?
Again, I would tell you, industry standard type approaches. We would have two doses at a minimum going into those pigs, and I should say a split dose program. Mm-hmm. But full doses, and in some cases, full doses plus going into those pigs. And really felt good about it, and no changes in the vaccine program that led up to this. The same vaccine program that those pigs had been receiving since the farms had started up, still in place when we had the outbreak, and unfortunately we had the outbreak and it blew right through that vaccination program.
So what do you do as a veterinarian?
Talk to people who know more about it than you do is step number one, right? There's a phrase that I love: copying from one source is plagiarism, copying from multiple sources is research. So you go consult the research, right? At Carthage, we get access to a wonderful reference library. But so we'll search that and pull everything up and read up on it. You talk to the diagnosticians and you say, all right, how can we characterize this? And how can we look for the potential causes of it, the other pathogens, those sorts of things? We went as far on the diagnostic side to engage Kansas State and do some next generation sequencing. Hmm. Let's go in and look at samples that were from before the outbreak and then after the outbreak, and see if there are other pathogens, other infectious agents that just happen to show up in those things. Maybe that we don't even have PCRs for today because we don't think about them. But is there something in there that can help us explain this before and after story? You do sequencing, see if it's the same isolate everywhere. I mean, is it a new mutant virus that nobody's ever seen before? And you compare it to the other sequences that are out there. And then at the end of the day, you use the one tool you have for circovirus, which is vaccine. So in terms of interventions on the sow farm, you're going to go in and you're going to mass vaccinate the sow farm. You're probably going to try and make the routine program more robust, whether that's more antigen, so a higher dose that's given to the pigs as part of their growing vaccine program in the GDU, and or, like I mentioned, rethink the need for a rotating mass vaccination of some sort to keep antibody levels up. In the growing pigs, again, vaccine, that's your tool, right? Mm-hmm. So you go in with vaccine and you mass vaccinate those growing pig groups that appear to be suffering from PCVAD.
So you're certainly not making any changes in that department.
Oh, no. I don't think less vaccine is a good idea at this point. It's the one tool we've got. It's been an extremely effective tool. We have to rethink how we're using it right now.
Okay. And what would that entail when you say rethink how you're using it?
Yeah, number one, the pigs never lie. The pigs are telling us there's a problem, so it's going to force us to do some trial and error. We need to do good research. We need to run pigs through challenge programs where we take these isolates that are causing problems and we challenge the pigs with those specific isolates under different vaccination regimens. Before we get there, there's going to be trial and error in the field. And a lot of that, like I said, is going to be, let's put some more antigen in. Let's measure antibody levels and see if we have potentially maternal antibody interference, something we historically haven't worried about with PCV2 vaccines. But again, the pigs are telling us something's different. So we have to approach it from that perspective. We can't put our head in the sand and say, well, the research we did 5 years ago tells us this should work. Well, the pigs are telling us that it's different, and the pigs don't lie.
And in the work that you did with K-State, did you learn anything about the presence of other pathogens that might have triggered this?
I'd say it's still too early to tell. We need to set up controlled studies, and maybe we don't just need to challenge the pigs with the circovirus. Maybe we need to do that for some groups, and then some groups we need to challenge them with circovirus and Agent X or whatever other cofactors we think are involved.
A related question, but it's really quite different. PCV3, mm-hmm. which is really similar to PCV2 in name only, because I'm told by Dr. Madsen at Iowa State, it's a completely different virus. Have you seen any of that circulating in any of these pigs?
We can find PCV3 sporadically, but we don't find it at extremely high levels of virus within the pig, and we don't find it consistently. Let me say it this way. The pigs tell us there's a problem. When we go do diagnostic assays on the pigs that have the problem, sporadically we find it, not at very high levels, but it looks more just like an endemic, ubiquitous agent that the pigs happen to be infected with, but it doesn't appear to be the primary driver in these cases.
Well, just when you think the final word had been written about PCV2, along comes a situation like this to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, there's some great quotes out there about, the essence of wisdom is essentially just recognizing you don't know everything and stay on your toes because things change.
It's a humbling industry.
It's a humbling profession.
Yeah, I bet. Well, we've been talking to Clayton Johnson. He's a swine veterinarian at Carthage Veterinary Services in Carthage, Illinois. Thanks again for coming by.
Thanks, Joe.